Welcome to the Towers Podcast. I'm Kate Tanula, and I am one of the editors-in-chief of this year's magazine. The Tower is the undergraduate art and literary magazine at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. The magazine is produced, published, and promoted all by students during a two-semester course. Every year, the Tower staff chooses a theme for the edition. This year, our theme is Asterisk. We chose Asterisk for its different functions across disciplines. It can be used to reference footnotes, mark a section break, and serve as a symbol for multiplication. Asterisks can be used in many ways, and this fluidity is at the heart of this year's theme. Our theme underscores that there is always more to uncover. We believe that the adaptability of asterisk lends itself to creating an inclusive space that supports the exploration of new and numerous approaches to life and storytelling. My co-editor-in-chief, Lawrence Lee, is going to talk a little bit about why we're listening to a podcast right now instead of hanging out at our annual launch party.
Hi, I'm Lauren Swee. Usually we celebrate the publication of our magazine in April with a launch party at the Wiseman Art Museum. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, that party was canceled. With our entire campus shut down, our staff had to get creative to find a way we could celebrate this year's edition. Like the launch party, this podcast will feature both staff and artists. You'll hear contributors read from their writing and others discuss their work, as well as some of our editors talk about their experience being on staff and their personal favorites from this year's edition, all from a combination of this edition's art, fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. To see featured art, please check out our art/artwords page at sites.google.com/umn.edu/thetower2020podcast. The Tower staff would also like to thank our professor and faculty advisor, Dr. Jim Selar. Without Dr. Selar's help, this magazine and podcast wouldn't be possible. Now let's hear a word from our genre chief.
Hi, my name is Anne. I am an art editor and managing editor for the magazine. An art editor has a slightly different job compared to the other genres since we have less written text to rely on for explanation. Also, art is subjective, dependent on emotion, opinion, and viewpoint, such that it can be difficult to talk about or explain. That is the challenge of an art editor. I end up interpreting the art multiple ways until I settle on one. My favorite part about working on the art genre team was talking to the artists and the art editors, because each new person brings a new viewpoint and interpretation to the discussion. Art to me is an expression of emotion and experience. While working on the magazine, I found myself especially appreciative of the colors and vibrancy of each piece. Apart from the visual attraction, color evokes mood and tones throughout the piece as a whole. For example, softer color palettes make me think calmer and evoke almost something surreal and dreamlike, while a harsh contrasting color palette makes me think of conflict. These feelings help interpret the story that is mixed into the art. The best part is that everyone who looks at the piece sees and feels something at least a little slightly different. I was so happy to see all the colorful submissions. Every time I got the alert that a new piece was submitted, I couldn't wait to look at it. The art pieces included in this year's edition tell stories a little differently than the other genres of the magazine, being explicitly visual, but I think you will enjoy them all. Hi, my name is Anne, and I have the honor of introducing a work of art, Turn on the Light, to the podcast. This is an oil painting on wood depicting a tank firing a pink-orange cloud. One of my favorite things about this piece is the contrast between the dark tank and soldiers surrounding it, and the explosive bright cloud of smoke it emits. When you see it, you can tell it plays with a literal and figurative sense of shadows and light. The next segment I will read is a statement from the artist Taylor Robbers about Turn on the Light. This painting is a collage of two parts, the tanks and the cloud of color. The tanks are based on a photograph taken by my grandpa. He was the funniest guy and he made me laugh for hours. He is one of the most cherished adults in my life. When I was 10 years old, he passed away. While going through his things, we found his photography. It was then that I first learned he served in the Army when nuclear tests were taking place in the deserts of Nevada. While looking through his photos, I tried to imagine the emotion and the physical feeling of witnessing a nuclear blast in person. This painting, for me, is about processing emotion and uncovering stories.
Hi, everyone. My name is Afton, and I'm the Chief Poetry Editor, Managing Editor, and Artwords Judge at The Tower. Working as a Chief Poetry Editor has been a blast. I've had the privilege to collaborate with other genre chiefs and our editors-in-chief to oversee the entire production of the magazine. I also had the pleasure of working with my poetry editors, Chandra, Haley, Maggie, and Sarah, all of whom are extremely passionate and talented. Chandra and Sarah, in addition to being poetry editors, worked as leaders on our design team, guiding the other designers towards aesthetic excellence every step of the way. Maggie is the head copy editor, and she deftly coordinated with both copy editors and genre editors to ensure every inch of the magazine was properly punctuated and put together perfectly. Haley, in addition to being a poetry editor and copy editor, also worked on our development team. Without her, we would not have the funding necessary to put together productions like this. It's really rewarding to see so much talent come together. And with over 400 submissions, it was both humbling and exhilarating getting to read so much poetry. We have a few selected readers who agreed to join us on this podcast, but I really do have love for every writer and contributor we've had the pleasure to read from this year. And I'm so glad this podcast is able to celebrate our literary community as a whole. For me, poetry is a beautiful genre because it allows for so much personal and universal expression. In poetry, you can utilize rhythm and sounds to evoke emotions, use or disregard form to break conventions, and have the artistic freedom to play around with weird grammar or odd imagery to really surprise your readers. Now, I'd like to introduce Sarah and Maggie, who will speak a bit more about their experience working with this gorgeous genre.
Hello, everyone. My name is Maggie, and I'm the Chief Copy Editor, Poetry Editor, and Publicist for The Tower. Working with the poetry genre team has been a whirlwind. Being able to read every single poetry submission that we received was truly a privilege. And by every single poetry submission, I mean every single one. The process was unlike anything else, and I wouldn't have been able to do it without my amazing fellow poetry editors and Afton as our Chief Poetry Editor. I also had the amazing opportunity to oversee the copy editing and proofreading processes, which allowed me to see the magazine come to life firsthand. I am so excited about the poetry that is featured in this year's edition of the magazine. Something I love about poetry is that one piece can evoke so many different emotions, and that any one person will not experience the same poem in the same way that someone else has. Each time someone reads it is a unique experience. When I read a piece of poetry that makes me feel an emotion strongly, I fall in love with it. The process of falling in love with these pieces of poetry was something I will always remember, and I am incredibly excited that we finally get to share these pieces with you all so that you may fall in love with them the way that we did. Each piece that we accepted and each piece you are about to hear today made me feel strongly, and I am hoping that they make you feel strongly too. I hope you enjoy! The first reader that you'll hear from is Kira Kajimo. Kira is an undergraduate student from Minneapolis, Minnesota. She is pursuing a BFA in ceramic sculpture. In her words, her head is usually half in the clouds, chasing daydreams and inventing worlds. Her three poems that we chose to publish in this year's edition, These Days, Navy-Hued Nether Planet, and Crying in Public, take everyday scenarios and emotions and turn them into whimsical, complex experiences. Her writing style is what drew us in from the beginning. I am very excited to introduce Kira.
Hi, I'm Kira, and I'm going to read you some of my poems. This first one is called Navy-Hued Nether Planet. I like to go walking at the creeping firefly edge of night. My eyes soak up the heavy overhead paint swatch ocean at dusk's shore until blue irises rehydrate and the sky's new lack of sea is the lonely color of coal-smeared longing, sparkling messenger airplanes shooting between distant star lovers they'll never reach. Sometimes in the dark, I forget that I exist. Not the solid 3D fuzzed and freckled me, but the fragile, precarious air conditioner in the third story window scaffolding of I. I becomes a letter, now tendril, unfurled, reaching towards haloed orange bear hug belonging. Solid, squishy, wavy, circular, oozy, slimy belonging. Belonging to the twin melodies of glowing neon cat gaze headlights and humming nocturnally purple wind. As the last exhale of sleepy sunshine rolls over put-to-bed concrete, the secret other world of night blooms dinner plate-sized hibiscus open. Under the non-judgmental care of the ever-coy and smirking, caffeine-addicted moon, crickets play the accordion in grassland alleyways for passing possum peddlers in dirty gloves, and cars wander around this navy-hued nether planet looking for connection. People too, and some people are at home, alone, and together, alone, and some don't even close the curtains. I walk through it all, still walk, walking into, I wade. I wade into the dark waters, shiver as the cold reaches my thighs deeper. I splash, marvel, twirl in the pool of mystery possibilities breathing inside each shadow, and dance to that strange, written with the left hand song. It's the overture of pinch me waking dreams, but also the rich, slippery flan of unconscious ones. And falling deeply into words, spirals, pajamas, love, sleep, and me walking, waiting, dancing, in love myself, throw on a jacket, love, in love with the night. This next poem is called Crying in Public. My waterlogged, absurdly complicated thoughts are sea shanty knotted together and straddled with wet woolen clothes, or maybe a whole unshorn sheep, that weight, a course of strong-knuckled grips. They drag down, an anchor sink dip. I can feel a kicking, fetus-like discomfort, red angry in my stomach now. It tingles in wave pool increments through my arms too. Vivid purple-blue and shiny African violet bruises on my eyelids, tells of anxious brain meanderings through a sink-holed Florida subconscious. I'm all oversaturated limestone and human funk. Nose, ears, especially search-strained eyes. Now leaky roof orifice is that drip, drip, drum. Tear-shaped sorts of drops, drops, drops. I should carry a bucket with me to collect the liquid too much, much, much. And finally, my last poem I will read is called These Days. These days ignore my running and waving left behind arms beside their leaving train. These days wear rollerblades, push off the ground with the thick-thighed legs of speed skaters. These days fly by on wheels of pink frosted sunsets, and I'm left gawking and dizzy at the Monday turn Sunday turn Tuesday turn Monday. I can barely take a hyperventilated breath, a technicolor cloud, somehow my lungs inflating. Night car lights on the freeway blur of hours. Melancholic gray yesterday, pale blue-green today, bright orange tomorrow don't exist. But then they happen or don't, or do or don't, or happen or not, or then or never, or will or won't. And there I am again, the now empty station of present. My luggage sandbags me to the ground. Otherwise, I'd float forever in the stratosphere, where my body would be the only clock, the freckles of my darkening skin tally marking each second. These days are liquid and seep through the gap in my front teeth. I've started to wear a watch, but it has no numbers. The speed of time moving has become hard to see. I can't read minutes, the geometric fear of aging, though sometimes I feel the triangles and squares in my body during the middle of the night. Thank you.
Next is Caitlin McBride, who is a senior looking forward to graduation after 4 years of studying communication, creative writing, and film. Although originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Caitlin is a big fan of the Twin Cities, where she enjoys biking, making videos and music, and connecting with loved ones. In the future, she plans to get a job and write more. Her next poem, Hanging, has an honest voice that struck me deeply as it explores a theme of family and growing pains. I'm pleased to introduce Caitlin.
Remember that flower basket we put up each spring, hanging up delicately, only by a thin hook and string, off the corner of the front porch? You stood so tall above me, effortlessly reaching up and bringing down the little bird's nest to my eye level. I saw that they couldn't open their eyes, those ugly featherless babies just hatched, their mouths shutting and unshutting in rhythm, blindly begging for food. They were mistaking us for their own mama, so I probably got defensive because you are my mama and not theirs. You hung them back up and we went inside. Maybe you made me a ketchup sandwich and I unshut and shut my mouth, devouring the preferred cuisine of my childhood. I haven't had a ketchup sandwich in forever because they are disgusting and because only you know the recipe. Still, you come to town to see me anyway. You drive me to that fancy grocery store, buy me pot stickers, tomatoes and arugula, frozen pizza. So much food that the cart overflows. The night before you leave, we sit quietly in your hotel room. You tell me to try yoga and volunteering and journaling, to sit tight until the weather gets right. I can see you back home on that first warm, sunny day, stepping through the yellow door onto the front porch, the new plant in your hands. You'll hang the flowers up again so delicately, in the same spot I first saw the nest and the inevitably needy babies. You'll go back inside, make coffee and toast, go to work, go to yoga, and soon enough, another round of baby birds will sit helplessly and mistake everyone for their mama.
The next reader you're going to hear from is Jeffrey Ayers, who is an English major currently set to graduate in spring 2020. After graduation, he hopes to get an MFA in poetry and to publish a book. You can find his previous work featured in the Paper Lantern and previous editions of The Tower. We chose to publish his next poem, Lo-Fi Hip-Hop Office, because of its unique voice and fresh detail. I'm happy to introduce Jeff.
Lo-Fi/Hip-Hop Office by Jeffrey Ayers. The lampshade is lit like two mixing bowls on the moon, spilling their light into space. So I hop on the photon trail, a charcoal carbonated pilgrim fumbling and throttling, accelerating through the office on an electric yacht. Whizzing past the hubbub and bustle of the streets of Minneapolis, I swoop through the gritty grouts on the sidewalks, and then veer upwards to ear level and listen to the poetry of Wise and Steps on Concrete and TMZ Gossip. The saddling of the seats on the cars as it passed is the worst of Tuesday's tiptoe from Monday's start. But even the white squirrels on Twin Oaks hide their precious goods. So on the sun-scattered sidewalk of Dinkytown, I'll whoop and yell, chest floating and eyes strobing.
Hello again, I'm Maggie, and next you will be hearing from Emma Heckel, a writer based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Emma is an advocate, educator, friend, and laugh inducer. Her work is largely informed by an enthusiastic attentiveness to the natural world and inability to drive past wildflowers without stopping. How to Pray at Dusk and Rites of Passage are published in this year's magazine because we fell in love with their unique perspective of the natural world around us. Please enjoy Emma Heckel's reading of her poem, Rites of Passage.
My name is Emma Heckel, and I'll be reading two pieces. The first is How to Pray at Dusk. For you, you who is the milkweed and the honeysuckle and the bullfrogs and the morning dew, and the sunrise, and the sunrise, and the sunrise. And you who is the rain, and you who is the wren's nest, and you who is the dead mouse and the baby bird, and you who is the porch cat, and the wind, and the rocking chair, and the cherry tobacco smoke, and the wasp, and the sunrise, and the sunrise, and the sunrise. And you who is the earthworm, and you who is the mint leaves, and the petunias, and the wild roses, and you. You who breathes poetry into the still, entangled night. The second piece is called Rites of Passage. 1. It is 8:30 in the morning, and my father's rough, calloused hands are learning the art of braiding. I stand obediently on a chair in front of a streak-stained mirror that is too tall for my 5-year-old body to see into. My father's clumsy hands repeat the same pattern with 3 uneven strands of hair. Left, middle, right, middle, left, middle, right. 2 pink and yellow hair bows are tied in at the base of my neck. 2 tiny sunrises wrapped like silk around thick braids. Here, I learn how gentleness can manifest itself in heavy ways. Under tough, stop bath skin. In 2 matching sets of gray-blue eyes. In hair bows. I wobble on the chair and a hand steadies it. 2. There is a tree in the backyard of the house I grew up in. It grows apricots from tangled limbs that reach out like arms. I watch the silhouette of the tree move back and forth at night from my bedroom window, and I think that the tree is going to grab me when I fall asleep. My mother fastens a blanket across my window with clothespins. I watch the tree from between the blanket and the splintered window frame and wonder if it can see me too. In the summer, my father pays me to pick the apricots up off the ground, a penny each. The rotting fruit gets stuck underneath my shoes and dribbles sticky orange honey onto my hands when I pick it off. Sometimes I climb the tree and hide in the tallest branch so nobody can see me. I pull green apricots off their stems and watch them fall to the ground with a thud. That summer, my knees turn a dull shade of green. 3. The first time I learn how to balance is on a bicycle with 1 training wheel. My father doesn't trail behind me with his hands on my hips like the others do. My father taught me to be self-sufficient. My body leans to the left, all my weight on 1 small white wheel. I ride in circles in my driveway because I'm not allowed to ride in the street, and I leave a trail of black skid marks on the pavement. 4. I spend 3 weeks each summer running barefoot through the forest that envelops the back of my grandparents' farm. It is here that I learn to run without stopping, even when it hurts, and how to swallow honeysuckle stems. I talk to trees and pirouette around anthills. I catch frogs in an old litter box container and forget to let them go. My grandfather builds me a circus in the middle of a clearing. I drag him out to watch me cartwheel in the meadow and he watches, grinning in the big, goofy, closed-mouthed way I hope I do someday too. I'm applauded by my grandfather and every tree in the forest. I bow and thank the flowers and get poison ivy walking home. My grandmother makes me wear her 2 big galoshes when I go outside from now on. 5. I turn 18 and move to a big city because I only know how to fall asleep to the sound of cars passing by. I turn 21 and rent a studio apartment and learn how to build a home with screws between my teeth. I cuddle with the radiator and cry on the carpet. Dishes pile in the sink. 6. I move into a house because it has a willow tree in front. We buy an expensive dining table but cannot afford to buy chairs. The table is mahogany and scratched from being thrown in the back of a pickup truck to travel 462 miles to our front door. Without chairs, the table becomes a couch, a mattress, the floor, a wrestling ring, a boat. Sometimes I say a prayer for the mahogany tree that was uprooted from its fancy Florida home just so people could eat off of it. I wonder if it misses the weather. 7. It is 7 o'clock in the evening and 3 people I love have died this year. I learned that it is a shame not to dance when there is music, and so I fall in love again with my feet on the windshield of a Subaru Outback, while the canyon walls turn from pink to blue and the sun crawls away looking embarrassed. I learned that the sun, like everything else, disappears slowly and without a goodbye. I wonder how the sun chose what colors to paint, and if it had training wheels too. I wonder if I can ever learn how to burn without apologizing. I wonder if I can bury it, bury the sun with 2 hands, under wet dirt, in the backyard, crawling with worms and rotting fruit.
Hi, my name is Haley, and I'm a poetry editor, development director, and a copy editor at The Tower. Our next reader is Emily Rasher, who is a freshman studying English. She's from a small suburb of St. Paul and enjoys writing poetry and building things in her spare time. Someday, she hopes to open up her very own joint coffee shop and bookstore. We chose to publish her poem, The Day, because of its honest look at relationships and what we are faced with when they end. I'm very happy to now present Emily.
The rubber back of my rain boot rubbed a hole through my sock and then my skin as we walked. Downtown is most beautiful in the rain. The steady stream of runoff whispering to the gutter. I can't remember if my cheeks were more wet from the rain or the pain in my heart. I heard you say you didn't want to be with me, and then an audible bone-like snap from my chest. Or was it in the sunshine? While we drank in the coffee and the colorful leaves, the hard back of my tennis shoe rubbing a hole through my sock, and then my skin as we walked. The river is most beautiful in the sunshine. Your cold tone, a mere breeze whispering through the bright leaves. I heard you say you didn't want to be with me, and the sun suddenly could not warm my chattering bones. I remember now. We were in a bookstore, a local one with tall shelves and rolling ladders. Bookshops are most beautiful when full of whispering customers. The worn back of my Converse rubbing a hole through my sock and then my skin as we walked, weaving our way from aisle to aisle, stopping at the poetry shelf. I remember this now because after the crime, I remember thinking, seems right. You reached over my head to grab a book my fingers couldn't quite reach. I heard you say you didn't want to be with me, and the letters I was reading suddenly turned into shapes I couldn't decipher. No, it was at the beach at sunset. It was in the checkout line of a grocery store. It was at the basketball game as the clock ticked to zero. It was in a theater after the show. And all I have left is a single sock with a hole worn through and the whisper of a fractured truth.
Hi. My name is Chandra, and I'm a design manager and poetry editor at The Tower. Our next reader is Lauren Foley. Lauren is a junior majoring in English and Spanish studies with a minor in creative writing. She's been writing and reading since long before she knew how to do either, and her work has previously been published in The Tower, 2018 edition, and The Wake. We chose her poems, Kitchen Scene 1 and Our Body in Segments, because their stunning detail and signature voice create an excellent mood. Please welcome Lauren.
Kitchen, Scene 1. In kitchens, everything echoes. Stove, the ticking pulse point of the room's thumb. Disposal, the stuttering of the sink's cleared throat. Lines, the split eyelids transferring parceled wind and darkness onto marbled tile. The kitchen echoes here, speaks first to itself, then nods to its occupants. See, voice one, noun, a rough, smooth thing, like the ridges a butter knife leaves down a serrated yellow lip. The intake of air just before a punchline, helium swoop, balloon pop, an omniscient smirk, or the exact face a cat makes before touching one padded paw to a full glass of water. In English, the words kitchen and home are synonymous. Think the shoes tiptoed on the mat by the door. Think the oven light that winks before blinking out for the fifth time that summer. Think the swollen fruit gathered at the edge of the countertop. Not quite dangerous. Inch from edge. Voice 2. Verb. To gather the collar of a black jacket, waterproof slick and smooth fabric crumpling, folds overlapping like skin wrinkling between thumb and forefinger. To thunder, but only in the context of a hurricane trapped between vertebrae and sternum. To try to deceive and fail. In dreams, the kitchen clock runs backward, hours stacking like loose change on the tabletop seamed by split-thread initials of people who never lived there. Hands strain city-wide power failure through inherited cheesecloth, draining the home into a glass. One paw, flatline. Our body in segments. Snake woman, spitting all her teeth out like diamonds, princess cut and so venom-edged they could split a man open at the seam, stitch his skin back together with feathers, I beg her, tell me how you got to be this way. Standing on the riverside, back to God and herself, and straw shoved deep into mud, sucking the earth until it shudders and collapses, upheaval just the sand beneath her crescent moon nails. Mama said morals don't make a man, but they practically raise a woman. And I can't stop staring at her. At her countertops cluttered with orange pill bottles and molted owl wings, at the cross bisecting her bare throat, urging me or someone else to slam back the rewards of misbehaving, at her melon-slick mouth murmuring all the promises she's made to man and kept to earth. Maybe I'm just another one of her promises, another bare-skinned apology to the world that made her but fumbled and made the rest of us, too. We never learned to keep balance, never learned the feel of the root binding our ankles to earth, never learned worship with kerosene and egg yolk sliding down the back of our throats. I beg her, tell me how you got to be this way. Save me or teach me or feed me to the ground. The devil is in her eyes, but God is in her hands. And when they lay me to rest, I'll feel the shudder, her teeth loose, the prick of them at my stomach, the jag from biting off a bottle cap. Mama said morals don't make a man. If only she learned that they never even come near a woman.
Our final poet is Carla Gabriela Abreu. Carla is a senior at the University of Minnesota studying Spanish, creative writing, and strategic communications. She loves stories, coffee, and science fiction. Her poem, The Letter, explores loss and creates a quiet atmosphere of homey comfort and empty spaces. Working with all of these talented poets has been nothing short of an absolute privilege for our team, and she is no exception. I'm happy to present Carla.
The Letter by Carla Gabriela Abreu. It sits there on the coffee table, the paper a little yellowed, a little warped from dried up tear stains, a little frayed from shaking fingers, tracing every word, every night. I stare at it from the couch, from the left corner of the couch. Yours was always the right side. The blue battered blanket wrapped tightly around my shoulders, the same one you would always steal during movie nights, curl up in, dive in, and shut out the world in. I kept the blanket. It sits there, the edge of a trap between the table and that hideous purple polka-dotted mug you love, the one I could never put in the dishwasher so it wouldn't break, the one I couldn't touch, the one that had to be exhibited on the kitchen counter, a permanent reminder of you. I kept the mug. It sits there, the paper glowing in the light of the fireplace, as Bear lounges in front of the flames, his face is a little droopier, his tail a little heavier, but he still carries the duck you gave him for Christmas, the one that doesn't squeak so you could sleep at night, the one from when he was a puppy, the one that he still carries into the bedroom and lays on the right side of the bed. We kept the duck. We kept the mug and the blanket and the duck, and the hole-ridden robe and the cracked wooden paintbrushes and the five-string guitar and the never-ending collection of ear-dogged books and the non-paired socks and the faded flannel, and yet everything still feels so empty.
Hello, my name is Jamie Young. I'm the Director of Education at the Wiseman Art Museum. ArtWords is a unique competition that has successfully brought students' voices to the museum since 1998. Open to all undergraduate and graduate level students enrolled at the University of Minnesota, this annual writing competition promotes an interdisciplinary understanding of visual arts and writing. Student creativity offers rich and sometimes surprising insights into visual works. Their writing offers a valuable lens through which we can see these works in a new way. Both visual artists and writers look closely at the world, but also express personal and private experiences. The focus of ArtWords is to have students spend time observing, pondering, and dissecting a work of art, taking note of the characteristics of its composition and the emotions it brings to the viewer. Students are invited to select a work of art on view in the Wiseman's permanent collection galleries, and then write a short, creative piece inspired by the artwork they've chosen. Beginning with the 2014 Artwords program, WAM has partnered with the student-led art and literary magazine The Tower. This rewarding collaboration has strengthened the connection between art and writing on our university campus. Through this podcast and this year's dedicated issue of the magazine, the Wiseman Art Museum and The Tower are proud to present the undergraduate winners of the 2020 Artwords competition. It has been a joy to work with the amazing student editors behind The Tower and all the student contributors who submitted their creative writing responses to the Art on View at the Wiseman. I know their words and stories will inspire others, and I'm so happy to share their work with you. It's a welcome spot of sunshine in otherwise trying times that The Tower is releasing these winning writers' works now. I'm deeply grateful to them for sharing their creativity and insights with all of us, just when we need it most. Please enjoy the 2020 Artwords Competition winning pieces.
Thank you, Jamie. Hi, everyone. It's Afton, your friendly neighborhood managing editor, chief poetry editor, and Artwords judge here at the Tower. This year's Artwords competition has been a blast, and I had the opportunity to work with some of my fellow teammates, Mickey, who is our marketing director and one of our art editors, Kimberly, who is our publicist and one of our fiction editors, and Claire, who is a designer, copy editor, and fiction editor. We also had the privilege of working with some exciting guest judges this year. Michael Curran, the communications associate at the Wiseman Art Museum, Douglas Kearney, assistant professor of creative writing in the Department of English at the University of Minnesota, and Sam Van Cook, the founder and publisher of Button Poetry. Everybody's perspective and insight on all of the creative entries this year was both enlightening and fascinating, and I'm really proud of the sense of collaboration and camaraderie we had while judging. This is the Tower's 7th year as an Artwords collaborator, and we are ecstatic to present this year's winners.
Hi everyone, my name is Mickey, and I'm an Artwords judge and art editor at the Tower. We received some really great poetry inspired by Art on View at the Wiseman this year. I encourage you to go online or check out a print copy of The Tower and view the art that inspires these poems. It's really a magical experience to hear these words read aloud and see how they play with these amazing artworks. Let's hear from this year's winners.
Thank you, Mickey. Next, you will be hearing from this year's Artwords winners. Macy Rasmussen is a senior studying strategic communication with minors in public health and cultural studies in comparative literature. She directs The Wake magazine and DJs on Radio K. In her free time, she hunts for new bolo ties at thrift stores. Her first place winning poem, Situated Between a Hamlet and a Village, perfectly captures the art it was inspired by and leaves readers feeling the icy chill of the Minnesota plains in winter. My favorite line from Macy, a tree's shadow is disgusting because it's just a reflection of absence in this context. To see this art, please visit our podcast website at sites.google.com/umn.edu/The Tower 2020 podcast and search for the piece called Untitled by Tion Nguyen, or see it in person at the Wiseman Art Museum at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. I'm pleased to introduce our first place winner, Macy.
If there was noise in the void, it would sound like the snow kicked up softly by the wind on the countryside. Empty, cold, colorless, nauseating. There's no separation between the ground and sky, expelling the urge to take one step further. A tree's shadow is disgusting because it's just a reflection of absence in this context. The sight of a silo in the distance only represents past exhaustion, labor that's long gone. For a structure that has pulled many into null existence, it should have died a long time ago. Who would worship that which is desolate? Just as you only knew you were once lonely when you experienced genuine friendship for the first time, you don't appreciate the void until a stranger coughs in your mouth. You don't notice the overhead power lines until you've looked up from the base of a 56-floor consulting agency. Some flee the void when Aquarius season injects rebellion into their veins. Like the stars' governance, not everyone understands it. That's okay. That's the void. It's jarring for those who have left and returned. It may not be as they remember. After all, emptiness is open. Coldness incites impetus. A colorless space is a perfect canvas. Nausea is the ideal tool for purging the unwanted. In each snowflake, there's its own void. When it eventually melts, it's omniscient. Like astro water signs, not everyone understands how this place floats between reality and the imaginary.
Hello everyone, my name is Kimberly Zirun, and I'm a fiction editor, publicist, and artwork judge here at the Tower. The next reader you're going to be hearing from is Catherine Redica, who is a senior from Minnetonka, Minnesota, studying journalism. She enjoys design, photography, and waving to the light wool driver. We chose to publish her piece, How My Husband Makes a Jackson Pollock, because of its raw look at abusive relationships. Her piece was inspired by Marathon by Sam Gilman and won second place in an artworks competition. Without further ado, I am very happy to now present Catherine.
As for paint, any kind of object filled with non-solid matter will suffice. They need to fit comfortably in his hand, which means bigger than a gumball, but smaller than a cantaloupe. But also neither, if it's late enough or early enough or both. Perfume, hot sauce, candles lit, beer can, shampoo bottle, cup of coffee. These are the guidelines that do neither guiding nor line setting, but they seem to be instinctively followed by him and implicitly by me. Once you have your paint, it's time to choose a canvas. For him, a naked wall is usually best. Even a non-naked wall will work, since decor can act as targets. Shower curtain, countertops, television, fridge door, bathroom mirror. These work too. In an exceptional fit of his artistic inspiration, you yourself can also function as a canvas. Then comes motivation. An artist feels a driving force to create a piece, a great desire to express innate emotions. These will typically be sparked by menial things you do. Stopping somewhere on the way home from work without telling him, meeting a family member, being too late, being too early, eating meals without him, leaving the ice cream pine out for too long. These are a few, but you'll always discover more ways only after they've started the creative process. That's how my husband makes a Jackson Pollock. It's quite easy. How to get rid of these masterpieces, on the other hand, is hard. You'll need a pen, a new manila envelope. The other one has nail polish remover on it. Somewhere else to stay, maybe a friend's house, a new daycare, a gun for protection. But first, a notary and a good art dealer.
Hi there. My name is Claire Breitenbach, and I'm an artworks judge, fiction editor, copy editor, and designer on this year's edition of The Tower. I'm very pleased to introduce Joey Gotchnik, one of our third place winners of the artworks contest. He is a senior from Cloquet, Minnesota, studying material science and engineering. He enjoys songwriting, the outdoors, and the role that humor takes in everyday life. In the future, he hopes to find the proper balance between science and art, like the relative ratio of root beer to ice cream. This piece was inspired by Lift, a multimedia piece by Rhonda Willers. Lift shows a precarious balance between parts, and its beauty translates well into poetry. It was a pleasure to work with Joey to edit this piece, and it is my pleasure to introduce Joey Gotchnik, reading Around Here.
Time? What is time? We don't have that around here, she says. But how then, I thought, can I compare yourself to me? No number to make us seem similar, no skin wrinkle, hair color, or light amid your eyes. The balance of unbalanced strings lapping against bright plywood, yellow-coated and a screw too short. I've never felt this old before. I've never felt this young inside the box when I walk with an uneven bolo tie perfectly taut. Nail me down, I bet you can't, she says. You'll have to get to know me better than that. At a meal of sorts, the eggshells stack, never in the same way, the same routine, impossible. Strike, like lightning, never twice in the same place. Hammer and nail if I must, I know this time they'll eventually turn to rust. Screw the other side. This time, the balance beautifully becomes what hangs on and what turns to dust, dirt. Then that girl, fantastically swaying in the midnight sun, completely undone, unattached from the time around here.
Hi everyone, this is Mickey. Next we're going to hear from Samantha Sandvik and her poem Real Colorful Creatures, inspired by B.J.O. Nordfeldt's painting Green Woods. Samantha Sandvik is a recent graduate from Minneapolis, Minnesota. She enjoys going hiking and camping in northern Minnesota with her friends and family. She hopes to become a physician's assistant one day and inspire others. The art Samantha chose depicts a green and blue forest landscape that leads the viewer deeper and deeper to the depths of the woods. Samantha's poem provides a great play with the idea of this forest and youth and is a beautiful exploration into memory. Let's hear from Samantha next.
My name is Samantha, and I'm reading Real Colorful Creatures. I'm reminded of the crisp new pages of my inexperienced youth, quickly turned into crumbled corners, faded lines, ripped edges. I'm reminded of the boundless possibilities that arise from a single plot, a plot that has a rise and a fall with an ending that comes too soon. I'm reminded of where the wild things are and the creatures that lurk behind each tree, the sharp edges as teeth gleaming around each corner and the stones and waves from the midnight ocean glistening when I look back. I'm reminded that this night, too, has an ending. I'm constantly reminded of my past through your pictures, framed and hung where my eyes could not divert, a spinning circle of life that only ends where it begins. I'm reminded that these same trees, creatures, and the Komorbi that surrounds me directs me home again. I'm reminded of my drive to leave just as much as I'm reminded to be grounded, to remember where I came from. I'm reminded of the chaos of this so-called life and everyone it contains, the way it could all fit into simple geometric designs while bursting with irregularity. I'm reminded of the color purple, or when I called it blurple, and you said that wasn't a real color. The games we played made it seem real, real like those creatures are real, real like the pictures engraved in my memory, or my memory becoming a permanent picture. I'm reminded of you, in the night.
Thank you all for listening to the Towers 14th edition launch as a podcast presentation. My name is Anne. I am a managing editor along with Bailey and Afton, who you will hear in just a moment. As you may know by now, the Tower Art and Literary Magazine started in 1952 as a column in the Minnesota Daily. Today we are a class of 19 students running the magazine with the help of an English faculty advisor, Dr. Selar. Every year we ask for student submissions in the fall, then compile a themed magazine in the spring. We are happy to present the 2020 edition of the Art and Literary Magazine. Please visit our website to see the newest edition available online at thetower.umn.edu, which will be released at the end of April 2020. Our physical copies are sure to be available and free to all once campus is reopened.
Thanks for that explanation, Anne. As for everyone else, hi, I'm Bailey, another managing editor, in addition to being a copy editor and nonfiction editor for The Tower. At this time, we would like to sincerely thank the Minnesota Daily, The Wake Magazine, Fuse, or the Fellowship of Undergraduate Students in English, and Radio K for helping us get the word out for submissions every fall and for advertising the launch party each spring. We would also like to extend our appreciation to Chipotle and Blaze Pizza for their fundraising partnerships. We also thank our contributors, families, and friends of the Tower, and our professor and supervisor, Dr. Selar. We sincerely thank the business groups, without whom the creative work of the magazine would not be possible. This includes the copy editors, designers, developmental directors, publicists, marketing directors, managing editors, and our editors-in-chief. Afton will now explain the work these groups did in more detail.
Hello, everyone. My name is Afton, and I'm a managing editor, chief poetry editor, and an artworks judge here at the Tower. Thank you for listening. Throughout these podcasts, you have heard from each of our incredible team members, all in different genres including art, artworks, poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. Every person on the Tower plays at least two crucial roles between genre and business categories, and many have three or more. Please listen carefully to each person's introduction, and feel free to reach out to us if you'd like to learn more about what working in these roles on the Tower is like. Although I can confidently say one answer across the board will be fun. I'd like to take the time to thank the staff of the Tower for all of their hard work, from producing a literary magazine to creating this podcast. Working on a dedicated team of 20 people has been exhilarating, and I appreciate the time, patience, and effort that went into this year's edition. Our editors-in-chief, Lauren and Kate, have guided the team's thematic vision of this year's magazine from the very beginning. My co-managing editors, Ann and Bailey, have helped me to organize and create this podcast, collaborate with other business teams and genres, and to keep everyone on our production schedule throughout the year. Our online editors, Maddie and Shay, have done some amazing campaigns and blogs on our website and social media. Our marketing directors, Mickey and Annie, have guided our publicists, Riley, Jess, Maggie, and Kimberly, to perform an amazing amount of outreach and partnership with local businesses such as Radio K, The Wake Magazine, Minnesota Daily, Chipotle, Blaze Pizza, and so many more. Our development directors, Swetha and Haley, have worked closely with student unions and activities and the Minnesota Student Association to raise funds and make publication possible. Our design managers, Sarah and Chandra, have led the design team of Jacob, Maddie, Riley, and Claire to visual perfection on everything from flyers to the margins of our magazine, while our copy editors, Bailey, Claire, Haley, Jess, Swetha, and our head copy editor, Maggie, have followed up over and over to make sure everything we produce is nothing short of sheer perfection. Finally, I'd like to thank our director and professor, Dr. Jim Selar, for giving us the opportunity to work on this amazing team, which has been a once-in-a-lifetime experience. This podcast would not be possible without the help of Ryan Hayes, who guided every step from audio recording to editing, and who created our fabulous intro music. You can find him on SoundCloud and Twitter at DJHayesMPLS. I'd also like to extend my thanks to Jamie Young and the Weissman Art Museum, who collaborate in partnership with the Tower, from publicity to hosting our launch party. Despite the party being canceled in the face of COVID-19, Jamie and the Weissman have worked twice as hard and have been nothing but a pleasure. I'd also like to thank our ArtWords guest judges, Michael Curran from the Weissman Art Museum, Professor Douglas Kearney from the University of Minnesota's Department of English, and Sam Van Cook, the founder of Button Poetry. And, of course, the Tower would not be possible without readers, listeners, and contributors like you. Thank you.